Hi guys. Well, it's been a while. Just gotta dust this microphone because I have not spoken to this forum, this platform, in such a long time. And I think you have been patient. You have waited. I have heard the demands. The podcast will be back for season two, and I'm excited to say that I will be having new guests coming and sharing their experience of entrepreneurship and all the exciting things they've gone through, and hopefully drop some gems as well. But I know that I have not presented any content in the number of months that I have been away, and so I have presented you with a great bonus episode. So just a little bit of background before I just drop this in. I have been doing some research on a specific project I'm looking into. But because I am inexperienced with a couple of things, I thought, let me go to a number of seminars to sort of prepare myself for the inevitable of potentially getting people invested, and whether that's free money or just awareness. And one of the good things about putting yourself out there to learn new things is hearing people's stories on how they've done it. And this episode, or this bonus episode, is about storytelling. It's about pitching. It's about trying to get people to understand your viewpoints without having to talk about yourself per se, but what you can do for the other person. So there's a whole sort of conversation structure that I was able to learn on this episode of the podcast, and I'm just here to share the sort of knowledge and get you guys to sort of see if you find something useful that you can apply to your sort of, you know, jobs, or maybe you got an interview, maybe you might have a pitch event, whatever the case may be. I think there are some great, great stories, there's some great lessons, there's some great opportunities to sort of understand what you can do with the way you talk and the way you present yourself. So without further ado, I'm going to drop the episode. Let me know what you think about it. I'm always on, you know, the social media platforms like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, so drop your feedback there. And if you have iTunes and you're listening to the podcast through iTunes, please give it 5 stars. It's a 5-star podcast. And even drop a comment. Let people know how great this podcast is, because I am going to definitely invest my energy, my time to create new content for you guys. And I'm very excited. So, like I said, without any further ado, here's the bonus episode of the podcast.
So this is how the crop brain filters things. If it's not dangerous, ignore it. If it's not new and exciting, ignore it. If it's a new thing, summarize it quickly as possible and leave out the details. So you're talking from the neocortex, if you didn't know this, and if it's too complex, it'll just leave out 90% of your message. Eventually things get passed up to the midbrain and the neocortex. And if you've got a really sexy product, like some people here, if they had Elon Musk pitching something to do with Tesla, he could say anything you like. It's sexy, people will pay attention. But if you're pitching most things which aren't, you know, necessarily as sexy as other things, then you've got to pay attention to the fact that you've got to get through this croc brain first before you can move that message up. So the bottom line is the croc brain won't send anything up that's not unexpected or out of the ordinary. So what does this mean for pitching? Basically, these are the rules that I want you to take away about pitching. 3 rules. You have to get attention. You have to keep attention. And you have to be the prize. Does anyone have any idea what I mean by the third one?
Nope.
No, you're nodding. So have you got any idea what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Basically, it's you who's standing out there. So you need to shine there. You need to be the one. It's not your idea. It's you yourself.
Sort of, yeah. Did you have a...
But you are the only way to that amazing
thing.
So only through you will they get this exciting thing that you have presented.
On the right lines. Yes, definitely. And...
Is it that... You have to get into a stage where they want you. So you're the prize which they're getting.
Yes, exactly. So you're all right. So basically this, if you go into a pitch or any sales situation, right, being desperate, being attached to the outcome, and they smell that, you're on a losing, you know, the basically human psychology is that we want things we can't have, things that are out of reach, things that are difficult. If you enter that pitch situation or interview situation or any situation where you're pitching yourself, you have to understand that you are the prize. They need to work for you. And it's something that's very interesting, marketing, sometimes with my products and services, I make people fill out an application form. Why am I doing that? Because they have to qualify themselves to buy my thing. That puts me in the prize position, okay? So when you go into a pitching situation, you need to be understanding, especially with investment, money is a commodity. Like, there's loads of investors, money, you know, they need your business to make that money work. They don't want their money sitting in a bank, they want it working for them in a business, all right? So go in with that mindset. I'm not saying be rude, but just, you know, if you're desperate, they can smell it. So that's my three rules. You've got to get attention, you've got to keep attention, and you will understand that you are the prize. They're going to be lucky. You know, you could say, why should I work with you? Could you tell me a bit about, you know, the other companies that you've invested in, what your track record is? Oh, suddenly, they'll probably be a bit more interested in you. Does that make sense? Good. Okay. Now, I'm going to give you the ingredients, and this is for your marketing as well as your pitching. And I don't know how many of you already know this, but you need, if you can, to niche. Has anyone heard that before? The riches are in the niches. You need to pick a lane. This is basically what you need to do, because if you try and appeal to everyone, you'll appeal to no one, okay? It doesn't mean that you can't diversify later, and I'm going to come to that, but you need to pick a lane, ideally. I have no idea what that is. I think it's their thing. Is Prem around? I don't want to turn anything off because... Oh, it's gone. Perfect. Okay, so let me give you an example of a company. Oh, so, okay, in terms of niching, you can niche. I'm going to trot through this. I've got a lot to get through. I'm going to go through it quickly. You can, you know, find out more afterwards if you want from podcasts or whatever. But if you niche, you can niche in three ways. You can niche in terms of who you serve. You can niche in terms of what you do. And you can niche in terms of how you do it. And quite often you'll find companies that are niching in two different, multiple ways. Okay, so this company here, Nerd Fitness, pretty clear who they are targeting, yeah? So they are attracting nerds, the people that are interested in this gaming technology possibly, to fitness. And they're doing very well out of it. And it's counterintuitive. You think you need to appeal to the masses, but actually that is the wrong thing to do. Okay, so that's one thing you need to understand, and it's for your pitching and your marketing. Any questions on that before I move on? Good? Okay, ingredient two, the problem. In marketing, and some of you pick this up in your pitching, in marketing and pitching, whoever articulates the problem best wins. Whoever articulates the problem best wins. They become known as the category king. So you need to be able to really define the problem that your product or service is solving and focus on one problem. It's the same as niche. You need to focus on one thing. It can always have more features and benefits, but focus on one thing. And then you need to evangelize about that in your marketing. And the reason is because if you articulate the problem best, people are gonna go to you for the solution. Okay? Does that make sense? And then once you've established yourself, you can grow. These companies that I'm going to show you articulated the problem best. Apple. They started off with the iPod, then they diversified. Amazon. Jeff Bezos started Amazon selling books from his garage. Now they do lots more, but he got that. You know, that's all he did to start off with, books from his garage. He spotted a niche in the market, and that's what he did. Dyson, we all know Dyson's story. Now you've got hair dryers, air, whatever. You've got loads of things. But first it was the, I always still call it Hoover. It's because of my age, but anyway, it's a Hoover. Airbnb now do Airbnb experiences. They started off just with Airbnb. Is this all making sense? Tesla. Now, this is a fascinating story. You may know it already. Elon Musk, he was the one who had the IP for the electric car. But just like the fella Birdseye, when Birdseye started out, I'll come back to Musk, but when Birdseye started out, there was no frozen food industry. He had the idea from looking at the Inuits. If he saw them flash freeze stuff, and he worked out that it was healthier, but there was no infrastructure. There was no freezers. There was no way to transport. He had to build the infrastructure in order to get the thing off the ground. And he was articulating the problem. He had to define the problem that people didn't even know they needed fixing. And Elon Musk had this IP for the electric car, but he realized that you can have the electric car, but you need infrastructure. You need charging points. So you probably know this, maybe he gave the IP away. He gave the IP away so that the infrastructure could be created, because otherwise he would have been the category king of nothing. But because he started it off, because he defined the problem, now they're the category king. Does that make sense? So you've got to really define the problem. Okay, so there is a company in Silicon Valley, a big investment company called Bullpen. And each Friday they have investors come in and pitch. And one of their investors, and this is a great book for you to read, called Play Bigger. Play Bigger, it's a brilliant book. You'll recognize some of this stuff when you read it. As an entrepreneur, as a startup, it's a brilliant book to read. And one of the guys that wrote that book is on the panel of Bullpen for these investors, and he has three questions that he asks, and if they don't answer these right, they don't get moved forward. Can you explain the problem you solved to me as if I was a 5-year-old? Okay, now I've had a look at some of your websites for some of the companies in here, and I can tell you that there's some work to be done on some of them. It wasn't clear to me what problem you solved. Right, I'm not naming names, I'm just saying, for your startups, go back and look at your website. Back to the crop brain, if I come to your website and it's not clear to me straight away what problem you solved for me, I'm gonna go, all right? So get rid of the jargon, make it as simple as if a 5-year-old was reading it, okay? If your company solves this problem, what category are you in? You need to understand what market you are serving, all right? And back to that niche, you need to be clear about what market you're serving. And if you won 85% of your category, what's the size of your category potential? So they're simple questions, but you as an entrepreneur, as a startup, as a business owner, you need to be knowing these questions, the answers to these questions for your business. So yeah, are you clear? Yes, question.
So just on the slide before, what do you mean by the 85%? How do you, is that in the book that he defines it like that?
So the whole point of Play Bigger is talking about how you become a category king.
Yeah.
So Elon Musk is a category king. So they're saying, this basically to test that they know their market. So if you win 85% of the market, what is the size of that going to be, if that makes sense, in terms of revenue, I think?
Yeah.
So are you clear on what one problem you solve for your target customer? Is everyone clear on that? Good. Make sure that your marketing material and your pitch reflects that, okay? Ingredient 3. Again, this is for your marketing and your pitching. You need to have real deep understanding of your customer. This is marketing 101. You've probably heard this. Get to know your customer avatar, you know, put yourself in their shoes, blah, blah, blah. And it is actually true. So you need to understand what their, you know, there is a problem, but what is the pain that's underlying that problem? I'm going to come on to that in a minute. What are their fears? What are their desires and what are their objections? Okay, yeah, that's the, I suppose there's multiple ingredients there, but basically you need to know your customer. Here's a problem. Someone has got leaves on their lawn. What is the underlying pain here? I'm going to give you a model next, but we'll go through it with this. So the person has got leaves on their lawn. Why is that a problem?
Because they can't see the green.
Okay, cool. Why is that a problem?
Grass won't grow.
Grass won't grow. Okay, why is that a problem for them?
So eventually it's going to die and you have to reinstall that grass.
Okay. Why is that a problem? I want you to start getting deeper. Let's
peel. They cannot play football.
I never heard that one before, but I think that's absolutely. So, okay, let's. What does this look like? This is in a neighbourhood.
It's messy.
Right, so why is that a problem?
It devalues the area.
Why is that a problem? So you need to be getting into psychology here. Why is it a problem?
Upsets the neighbours.
Upsets neighbours. Why is that a problem?
Their pride.
Yeah.
If one house is messy, then it devalues everybody else's house.
It is absolutely right. Because at the heart of everything, every buying decision, every investor's decision, underpinning it is status. All right? You might, you know, what car you buy is a status decision. Even if you buy a little eco-friendly car, it's because you want people to think you're looking after the environment. If you buy a big Tesla, everything you do is driven by human psychology. Everyone is worrying about status. And this is a good thing. I'm going to throw a lot at you here today. You know, make sure you write this stuff down. One of the things that you need to do when you're selling your product to your customer is de-risk the decision. De-risk the buying decision. Because they don't want to lose status by buying the thing. How can you de-risk that? Free trial period. Guarantee. Okay, so you are, yes?
Isn't it a bit simplistic just to say that status is the only one? I mean, there's things like, you know, enjoyment and challenge.
Yeah, it is, all those things are valid, but at the heart of it, we buy with an emotion, and it is linked to status. So what have you bought recently? What car do you drive?
Well, let me say it's what I bought. I spent some money playing volleyball. Not really because of status, because I enjoy playing volleyball, so that's why I spent the
So you enjoy being in that sort of social situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, overwhelmingly, the motivation to spend that money was to get some enjoyment.
Okay.
You like the sport. You like the game.
Because I, you know, I guess I feel that the I guess it's actually hormonal, isn't it? You know, you feel that certain hormones get released when you're having fun.
Yeah, when you're having fun, I don't know your situation.
So I think there are some things like that. I accept that many things like cars and houses and, you know, about status.
But even that, I would say at the heart of it, you may not agree, but at the heart of it, there is status. So you want to go and be happy and social and look good, like fit and healthy and look good. I think if you peel back, this is just, you know.
If someone, you know, actually volleyball is a bit, in the UK, is a bit of a minor sport. Some people say, why would you play such a silly minor sport? But. So the status is...
Yeah, but you've just gone to status. You've literally just gone to status.
Yeah.
You've literally just gone to status.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying...
Because you want to be different.
You know, if status was a factor, I would focus on another sport.
Because we could have this debate, but effectively you went straight to status then. Because you said some people would say it was a minor sport, but you get some kudos from playing volleyball and it's a minor sport.
But overwhelmingly, the money you spent, for fun and for
I'm not saying that's not true. I'm really not. Those things are still valid, but underneath it all, when you make that decision, there'll be some influence around status. Whether it's subconscious most of the time, we don't even know it, but that is underlying it as well. But you can disagree with me.
I don't think status isn't a big thing. I agree it is in many purchases, but I think there is not all purchases.
But you need to consider it in terms of your customer.
Can I say something to support your point?
Yes.
Also that when a customer may want something and he or she is part of a corporation, the status is also the position within the company.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry,
I couldn't hear all that.
When someone joins a company, the position they have is all about status as well.
But I mean, if you're making a decision as a buyer, you make a decision of buying a product.
You want
to make sure you were talking about the risk and de-risk the buying decision.
Oh yes.
There is a question of status: is my decision going to be the right one so I can get my promotion or I can get the right be looked at in a positive manner by my boss and all of that sort of status in the corporate environment, you would think is really important, even if at the private level you may not feel it.
Yes.
I think when you're in a social environment in a corporation, it's...
Absolutely. Like if I was talking to... Let's say I was pushing myself as a speaker for an event and I would talk to the event manager, I would be talking to them about if they hired me, the event will run smoothly, everyone will have a fantastic time, and they're going, oh, thank God, if I hire this person, the event won't go wrong. And you would be talking about their fears and also talking about their desires. Absolutely. Yes. Did you want to say something?
Oh, just that confidence in sport, the competitive element, the endorphin rush of male victory in particular, is utterly and completely about status.
Oh, yeah.
If a volleyball chap was crap at volleyball, I don't know how much he would enjoy it.
That's a very good point.
Thank you.
But we're going into... There's all sorts of levels of buying decision. I just want you to bear this in mind, that people want to de-risk their buying decision, okay? Whether they're an investor buying a piece of your company or a consumer buying a product or service or your boss, but yes...
Maybe we can rephrase this rather than saying status is, could we say, social approval?
You could call it whatever you like. I don't mind. I that's why social proof is so important. Absolutely right. The social proof is another way of de-risking it, because if someone else has already bought that, and a lot of people have bought it, that's why testimonials are so important on your websites. Because in a way they are de-risking that decision because of social proof. Absolutely right, good point. Thank you. But just want you to bear this in mind, okay? So in manufacturing, they have a process called the five whys. And when you're thinking about why your customers, what problem you solve, use the five whys, which we just did, to peel back the layers. So someone may come to me to get a fantastic pitch and when I peel back the layers, I mean, this is just an example, there may be other motivations. The pain they have is that they want to spend more time with their family doing things they love. So if they can get a better pitch, they'll get more business, more money, they'll have more time, blah, blah, blah. Okay? So just use that five whys. Keep asking why till you get to a pain that you can talk to. And when you're talking to investors, they have a pain as well. You're talking to them around their pain, which is, they don't want to make a bad decision, so you're de-risking their investment as well. So think about it from that perspective. Cool, okay, now this is the other thing, really, really important thing. When you go to the travel agent, what are you buying?
Experience.
Experience, absolutely. You're by the skiing, you're being on the ski slope. You're imagining yourself in Paris for a romantic break. You're imagining yourself on the beach. You're imagining yourself on a yoga retreat. The problem is that sometimes when we're pitching and when we're marketing, instead of saying selling the destination, we sell the plane. We sell the features and benefits. No one cares. It might, well, maybe a little bit, but the first thing they want is they want the destination. So you need to be painting that picture. So I want you to, you know, when you guys, you did good, Peter, you went so far, but I want you to use words like imagine, blah, 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 blah. When you're talking about your pitches, you want the person to step into that vision. You know, you know, there's a problem, and then imagine the solution. Imagine, Microsoft, that you don't have loads of disparate IT systems taking up. Imagine if you could streamline your IT crew and get decisions in seconds. Imagine. That's a really powerful word for your pitching. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Is this useful stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so the question you need to bear in mind if you're pitching is, how does what you do solve their pain and give them what they want most? And that's in your copy, on your website, in your pitching, in your marketing, all that good stuff, okay? Okay, the other thing is to see objections as opportunities. Quite often, this is what we do about objections. We pretend they don't exist. Quite often, people will make a sale, and they'll be like, I've messed up, right, I'm running away, hopefully they don't have any issues. I want you to actively embrace objections. And from a pitching perspective, this is proactively thinking about what objections your investor may have to investing in your product. And from a marketing to your customer point of view, it's thinking about what objections your customer may have to buying your product, and proactively addressing those objections in your pitch, in your marketing, because if you can knock them out before people have thought of them, then you won't have to deal with, they won't, you know, you'll have taken them out of play before the buying decision happens. And objections normally come in three categories. Does anyone know what they are? Okay, good. So, first of all, people will have an objection about the vehicle. And this would be potentially your investors and your customers. So, you need to deal with any objections about the vehicle. So do you know what I mean by vehicle? Your product or your service. Okay, some of you may have, I know there's a company, I don't know if they're here, company that did online training packages. So you need to address, if you're here, you need to address the objection about, is it going to be as effective as in-person training? Probably going to be an objection. I'm trying to think of some other companies. The tea company. You just got to think. So yeah, you've literally just got to think about your product and service and brainstorm as many objections as you can think of that they may have about your vehicle, and then pick the top one and address that in the pitch. The next one will be their internal beliefs. So people may have an epiphany. They may think, oh my God, that controller sounds amazing. Oh, I can, you know, and then they'll be like, oh yeah, but will it work for me? Are my fingers too big? Like, you know, am I gonna move in the right way? And it'll be about them. Am I too old? Am I too young? Am I too stupid? Is it too technical? Am I gonna be able to do it? So you need to take away any objections that they have about their belief. And you can do that by social proof, testimonials. You can actually voice that objection and then knock it out. In terms of your pitch as well, your investor may say, well, will people feel comfortable with this? Or will companies blah, blah? So you need to address those internal objections as well. And then finally, the normal external beliefs, that's your final category. Time and money are going to be, you know, have I got time to do this? Can I afford it? But it may be, you know, if you're selling a new diet or a fitness regime, it may be, well, my wife keeps buying me cookies. so it's no good for me. So you need to address that sort of external objection, or if, you know, someone in their friends or family may have poo-pooed the thing, and you need to address that. So these are the three categories of objections. You need to think about that in your pitching. You need to be thinking about that in your marketing. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good. So they are opportunities. I'll just give you a little story. So I was working with a lady. She does, you know, the colours. I don't know if any women in here have had their colours done. So we were having a chat, and I said to her, I said, I would love to get my colours done, but I'm a bit overweight. And I think if I got my colours done, I'd want to go out shopping, and I wouldn't be happy to do that because nothing will fit me. That is, yes?
What colours,
sorry? Oh, sorry, so like, what colours suit you?
Okay.
Yeah, so sort of styling.
Okay.
So that was an objection I had, and I think it was probably an objection that maybe a lot of women might have had about getting the colours done. So we did a video addressing that objection, and knocked it out. So once you know, like, this could be whatever, you know, this is just an example, but whatever those objections are, you can proactively start knocking them out, and they become opportunities to sell. All right. Okay, triggers for action. Whether we like it or not, fear and curiosity are actually more powerful triggers for action than desire. Okay, does anyone disagree with that? Okay, we're gonna do an experiment just so I can prove it to you. Right, imagine you work in a skyscraper in London. Your office is at the top of one of these buildings. You have another office building directly opposite, maybe 100 yards away, and your window of your office lines up with the window of another office. So I'm coming up to your room, and I say, I tell you what I'm gonna do, right? I'm gonna get a really long plank of wood between the two buildings, and I want you to go out of that window. We're not gonna use any harnesses or anything. It's just gonna be you on the plank of wood. It's a little bit windy up here as well, but don't worry about that. I want you to crawl across that plank of wood to the other building. Would you do it? No?
No.
Okay. Who would do it? No, good. Okay, what about if I offered you £100,000 to do that? Would anyone do it? You'd do it. Okay, you do it. What, that high up? Fair play, okay. Not many takers. 500,000. You could lose your life. 500,000. Wow, some brave people here. 1 million. Anyone do it for 1 million? You can't. If you already had around that, you've lost the track. You've earned 500. You do it for 1 million. Okay, I'm going to change two things about that scenario. Your building is on fire, and your office door has been wedged shut. You cannot get out. The only way out is across that plank to the other building. Now raise your hand if you would do it.
Without any money.
And that is proof that fear is a bigger motivator than money, right? Than desire. It's a bit of an extreme example, but I just want you to sort of see that. People, you know, there are people that are towards and people that are away from. That's just, you know, generally the kind of way the human beings are made up, but more people, you know, will do something if it's their fear of loss, fear of missing out, or whatever. It will be more motivating than desire. And these ads from quite a while ago have actually used that fear. So there's a smoking ad there. People are going to pay attention. Here is a really old ad. I think that was selling toothpaste. Halitosis makes you unpopular. She's not going to get any dates that evening. So that is using fear. Oh, did you want to take the picture? There you go. Now, let me tell you about curiosity. when you, does anyone here watch any soap operas?
Sorry?
Soap operas, EastEnders,
yeah.
Coronation
yeah.
Street. What happens right before an ad break to the story? Sorry?
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. What happens at the end of the episode?
Cliffhanger.
Absolutely. Because they know if they give an open gap, you're going to be back after the break. And this is something that you can use in your pitching. If you think you're losing people's attention, there is a trick that you can tell a story. This is obviously for a longer pitch, like not today, but like if you were doing a 20-minute pitch and you think you're going to lose them, there's this trick that you can use called an intrigue story, which will you just start telling it, and you can't, it's got to be relatable to what you're talking about, but you leave them with a cliffhanger, move on, and then come back to it at the end of the pitch. That will keep their attention. Use sparingly, but in your marketing and in your, if you do public speaking, you need to be using curiosity. It will get people to take action. And, you know, if you want to, so in my podcast episodes, I might do a summary of the podcast. I won't necessarily tell them all the detail, like they'll have to go and listen to find out the end of the story or whatever. So in your emails, in your content marketing, in your pitches, curiosity is important. This company used it really, really well. They gave them a card, but they could only find out what the reward was if they took the card into the pizza place. Very clever, and it wasn't valid if it was opened. So that's a really good way of using curiosity. And this is like, there are some amazing people in the sort of direct marketing gurus from years ago, and this is, an old ad. They laughed when I sat down at the piano, but when I started to play, and people were like, "Oh, what happened? What happened?" And it was selling piano lessons. So curiosity and fear are your biggest triggers for action. And you can wrap those up in the most important thing, which is a story. Or a hook, whatever you want to call it, or an angle. When I went round, I was talking to you guys about, some of you about, you know, when you're talking about the problem you solve, if you can make it into a story, it's much more powerful. And when I coach people about using stories, if you can make it about one person, you know, the charities, when they're raising money, Comic Relief or whatever, and they go over to the countries, they will focus on the story of one person, you know, who's, you know, family. And it's because we can't take it in when it's about lots of things, but we will buy in emotionally to a story if it's about one person. So when you're using your examples in your pitches, like here with you guys, it could have been someone that hadn't been seen by a GP, they couldn't get in, and maybe they died, I'm making this up. But you know, suddenly an online communication portal between a GP and a patient becomes much more important, and you're sort of tackling the fear thing. Or, you know, the NHS could go under, or, you know, your aunt, you know, it's making it about an individual person and really sort of pulling on people's emotion. Making it about one person, it makes it much more powerful. When you're doing your pitches, when you're doing marketing, if you can use a story, an angle to illustrate your problem or the solution, they're really, really powerful, okay? Best tool you can use in everywhere, as far as I'm concerned. People will lean in. People are more receptive to what you're saying. It triggers that curiosity. It triggers the emotion, and it's that croc brain will buy in. Now, this is my hot mousse model. This is, so having said about all those ingredients, you know, the problem, the solution, the desire, the pain, the objections, bringing it all together in this model is you know, working those things into this is what I want you to do. This is the model that you can take away. You can get the ebook that's in the ebook. Basically, you need a hook. In order to get that croc brain to pay attention, you need a hook. That's the angle, that's the story about the problem. That's what I'm talking about. The key, you know, the imagine, putting themselves in the situation or talking about one person. You've got to pique their interest. Then you need to give a brief description of your business, what problem it solves. Remember that five-year-old, it needs to be very simple, it needs to be easily understood. You know, you're working at a high level. In your pitches, you do not want a lot of detail. Details can be something you give out afterwards. You've got to keep them engaged, all right? So keeping it at a high level. Who are you selling it to? An investor's going to want to know who is the market. Dollar Shave Club got VC funding because of their video, but they were very clear in who their market was. Nerd Fitness, very clear in their market. And I'm sure any of the big companies, like Tesla, I'm sure they've got an archetype. Who are you selling it to? Who's the market? What sector, industry, what category? Your business model, you've got to show them how you're going to make money out of this. Because money is a commodity, but they actually want to get it back again, right? And most investors are looking for a 10x return. So you've got to show them how to make money. That's the big ones, okay? They're looking for the unicorn, for the 10x return. Then tell them about your team. There is a law of averages in this. Tell them the best thing. Some people, when they're pitching, would spend 15 minutes telling the investors all about their qualifications, what school they went to. People aren't interested. And the more things you tell them, it's almost like the more things you tell them and the lower level, it diminishes the important thing. So if you tell them one important thing, that's going to be better than sharing a load of stuff. Okay? So remember, they've got a finite amount of attention, as you guys have. We're almost at the end where you're going to do your revision. Who are your competition? It's really important in your pitch that you show that you've done your research, you know who the competition is, and why you're better than them, which is the next point, okay? So actually, in this example, there are other different types of controllers out there which aren't as good as a Ring controller. You didn't know that, but that's, you know, that is the thing. And then you've got to ask for what you want and give them a question that they can say yes to, okay? So I'm going to keep that model up because we're going to do something. I've just got to show you this. This is literally, this, can you see it all right? Yeah. So you've literally got 5 minutes before attention starts to waver. But I would say when you are doing an investor pitch, their croc brain is going to be sitting there and it feels like a danger. Their time is money. So if you at the outset can say, I've just got 20 minutes, that's all I've got, then their mind can go, okay, it's just 20 minutes, I can relax. Okay, because they may be thinking, how long am I going to be sat here for? All right, so no more than 20 minutes for an investor pitch, and no more than 10 slides, I would say, all right? So you've got to keep thinking about how am I going to keep them engaged, and each point, maybe you have a curiosity gap that you open up, but that is how much time you've got. And if you confuse, you lose. All right? So what I want you to do is to revisit that pitch with some knowledge of what I've just told you and see if you would do it differently. Do you think you would do it differently? Maybe like, no. Sorry?
In 2 minutes, no. I don't think so. It's too hard. But with 20 minutes, absolutely.
You don't. So you wouldn't do it differently.
No. In 2 minutes, it's hard to come to a conclusion like with your recipe. It's not. It doesn't look that possible.
Let me just give you an example of how you could do it differently, even if it was 2 minutes. So you guys were doing energy efficient modular building.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are people interested in?
They're interested in getting, let's say, homes for. Good,
so let's pick up on the energy efficient.
Okay.
So the world is on a precipice. The environment is, the climate change is getting to a critical level. The polar caps are melting. little girls are going across to the US in a boat for 2 weeks.
I'm flying home.
Yeah, does she fly home?
Yeah, she does.
Oh, interesting. so your problem. So then, if we're working with the problem, and you want to hook them, you're talking about energy. You pick up on the energy, I think, and you would play on that problem. So many people are worried about the environment, worried about we've got a future as humanity, and so on and so on. There are polar bears dying as we speak. So, and that is an angle that you might choose. So the problem that you guys might pick would be to pick up on the environmental aspect of what you do. Okay, so I think you could change it in 2 minutes, but just, that's a suggestion to really make that story at the start grab attention and resonate. You don't have to use that, you can use one of the other ones. Would you like, if there's a DIY aspect, could you imagine building your own home in 10 minutes? I don't know, like that sort of thing. But this is what I want you to have a look at this again with fresh eyes and think about, how can I pick one problem and really build an opening story about that problem, and keep it tight, but use some of these tricks. Does that make sense? Do you think you could have a go? And just use your imagination. Like I don't care if it's made up, but I want people on the edge of the seat. Okay. So, we got plenty of time. So if you take another 20 minutes.
Hey podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking that play button. But I need you to do 4 things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content. It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever. So I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those 4 things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.